Today is Thursday, April 29th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden unveils infrastructure and jobs plan in speech to Congress.
We're vaccinating the nation. We're creating hundreds of thousands of new jobs. We're delivering real results to people. They can see it, feel it in their own lives.
Also, the world faces an alarming shortage of nurses.
National Nursing Associations finds disputes over pay, working conditions, violence, and intimidation are causing nurses to leave their profession.
Plus, the Biden administration may roll back some nuclear sanctions on Iran. These stories and more are next. In his first address to the joint session of Congress Wednesday night, President Joe Biden pitched his ambitious infrastructure and jobs plan while casting government as a force for good. The American presidential tradition was noticeably different in many ways due to COVID-19 protocols. VOA's White House correspondent Patsy Widas-Kowara reports.
Madam Speaker, the President of the United States.
It still has pageantry, but due to the pandemic, President Joe Biden's address to the joint session of Congress was attended by only 200 people instead of the usual 1,600. His main message to the American people, that democracy and government can still deliver.
We're vaccinating the nation. We're creating hundreds of thousands of new jobs. We're delivering real results to people. They can see it, feel it in their own lives. Opening doors of opportunity, guaranteeing some more fairness and justice.
Biden pitched his $1.8 trillion American families plan to expand education and child care, financed partly through taxing wealthy Americans. That's on top of the $2.3 trillion infrastructure package he announced in March.
The American Jobs Plan is a blue-collar blueprint to build America.
Biden delivered his speech later than most presidents, not only because he wanted to prioritize the country's massive vaccination campaign, but also due to security concerns. Just 4 months ago, supporters of then-President Donald Trump stormed Congress to try to overturn Biden's victory.
The worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War.
Now Biden is pitching his agenda to all Americans, including Trump supporters. Todd Belt is the director of the Political Management Program at George Washington University.
He was packaging his policies as patriotic competitiveness. Who could be against that? Packaging his infrastructure bill as the American Jobs Plan and talking repeatedly about jobs. Again, who could be against those types of things?
Biden renewed his call for gun legislation and, amid a surge of migrants at the border, urged Congress to pass his immigration bill. On foreign policy, Biden highlighted troop withdrawal from Afghanistan, the nuclear threat from North Korea and Iran, and pushing back against Russian aggression. He warned that Chinese President Xi Jinping is deadly earnest about turning China into the most consequential nation in the world, and that adversaries are betting on the polarization in American society.
They look at the images of the mob that assaulted the Capitol as proof that the sun is setting on American democracy.
First Lady Jill Biden did not bring guests to highlight the president's agenda, as is the norm. Instead, she hosted them virtually, including an immigrant nurse, a gun control advocate, and a transgender teen. Tim Scott, the only black Republican senator, delivered his party's rebuttal, playing down Biden's pandemic efforts.
Thanks to Operation Warp Speed and the Trump administration, our country is flooded with safe and effective vaccines.
For the first time, two women flanked an American president during his address to Congress, Vice President Kamala Harris and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, second and third in line of succession, respectively, marking a historical milestone in U.S. politics. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
U.S. President Joe Biden has pledged to put human rights at the center of U.S. foreign policy. Human rights leaders have welcomed strong statements from the new administration, but say action must follow. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more.
Harsh crackdowns on peaceful protests in Myanmar, Russia, and other places around the world tested the Biden administration's promise to make human rights a cornerstone of American foreign policy.
President Biden is committed to putting human rights back at the center of American foreign policy. And that's a commitment that I and the entire Department of State take very seriously.
Some human rights experts say President Joe Biden and Secretary of State Antony Blinken have struck a markedly different tone on human rights compared to the Trump administration, citing what they say is sharper criticism of China's treatment of its ethnic Uyghur minority.
The Biden administration has made this unequivocally clear that the Chinese government's treatments of the Uyghurs is egregious and that the U.S. government will not turn a blind eye. So that is about as radical a departure on China human rights as we've seen. I think under the prior administration, there was not nearly enough attention given to human rights abuses, whether it's in the Xinjiang region or in Hong Kong.
Other experts also note the administration's global focus on human rights.
We saw sanctions on the International Criminal Court lifted. We saw the global gag rule for women's rights lifted. We've seen a lot of support for LGBT people around the world, support for civil society, and certainly human rights has been mentioned quite often, especially by Secretary of State Tony Blinken.
But citing the Middle East, Holowinski and other experts say there is still room for improvement.
There have also been some missteps. So things that are very practical and not just statements include arms sales to United Arab Emirates and to Egypt, two known rights-abusing nations. So we still have a long way to go.
Experts say while a shift in tone is important, the real challenge will be how the Biden administration attempts to make nations like Russia or China pay for human rights abuses.
Having Secretary of State Tony Blinken say that what's happening to the Uyghurs in China is a genocide is one thing. Trying to impose a cost on China for those actions while also trying to get cooperation from China on climate and the pandemic and other issues is another matter.
With the COVID-19 death toll surging in India and other nations, human rights experts say providing critical help is another major rights issue. They are calling on the U.S. and other richer nations to waive intellectual property rights to allow greater access to life-saving vaccines. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Leading media organizations and watchdog groups have issued a new report concerning threats to press freedom across Europe. It documents a record number of reported violations, including physical attacks, harassment, intimidation, and online violence against journalists in 2020, in some cases intensified by COVID-19 pandemic measures. For VOA, Lisa Bryant has the story from Paris.
This is the third annual report authored by media groups partnering with the 47-member Council of Europe to promote press protection and safety in a region stretching from Portugal to Russia. Among its key findings, eroding legal protections for journalists and government interference are threatening free expression and the media's role as watchdog against abuse. William Horsley, media freedom representative with the Association of European Journalists, said 2020 saw a record 201 reported press freedom violations, up 40% from the previous year.
There's also a record number of 52 alerts for violent assaults and acts, including two deaths, one in Albania, one in Russia, and a record number 70 related to acts of intimidation, harassment of journalists in person or online, many of them in the street at protests. Other alert categories are imprisonment, impunity, and other acts having a chilling effect on media freedom.
Horsley said about half the reported violations were committed by politicians and public officials. In countries like Poland and Hungary, the report said, authorities essentially blacklisted media critical of them in favor of government-friendly ones. In other cases like Turkey and Russia, it found a monopolization of media outlets curbed diversity of expression. The report found COVID-19 health restrictions further curbed media freedoms in many countries, sometimes increasing surveillance and restricting journalists' ability to cover the pandemic, including at the risk of criminal penalties. It also described expensive bogus lawsuits and other measures by powerful entities aimed at silencing critical media coverage. Those measures are known as strategic lawsuits against public participation, or SLAPs. The report also highlighted growing online harassment, especially against female journalists.
They are increasingly victims of sexist insults and threats. There have been cases in Serbia, Spain, in a context of total impunity.
Ricardo Gutierrez is General Secretary for the European Federation of Journalists.
Our report denounces the passivity of online platforms and public authorities in the face of these threats.
The report outlines measures to protect press freedoms and echoes some of the findings on COVID-19-related restrictions in Reporters Without Borders' latest global report. Here in Europe, it said the policies went against the Council of Europe's warnings against restricting public access to information. Overall, it found little progress since 2016, when member states themselves agreed that attacks on journalism and media freedom had become alarming and unacceptable. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
The decision by global media giants to comply with demands by the Turkish government to open offices in Turkey is prompting concerns about media freedoms. Press freedom advocates say because the companies will now be subject to Turkish laws, that could mean Turkish people will no longer have a venue to freely express their views. For VOA, Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
In the Istanbul office of news portal Doku's 8 Haber, the latest news reports are compiled by both professional and citizen journalists. The news site relies on social media, which has become the main platform for independent reporting in Turkey.
90% of the whole media apparatus is in control of the state of the government in Turkey. There is no mainstream in Turkey anymore. It's apparatus of the government against the society, so the people can follow trustworthy news through social media.
The Paris-based group Reporters Without Borders this month ranked Turkey 153 in terms of media freedom. Yet Turkey's government wants to extend its control of media to the internet by pressuring social media platforms to open offices in Turkey. This will put companies' operations in the country under Turkish jurisdiction, with controls that Ankara claims are similar to those of other European countries. Advocates see some similarities to legislation being considered in Europe, but question how Turkey will apply such restrictions.
The government, in addition to warnings and financial penalties and advertisement ban, was going to impose a bandwidth restriction ban. The government was going to throttle the servers of the social media platform providers who did not comply with having legal representation in Turkey.
Twitter, Google, Facebook, TikTok, and others have opened offices in Istanbul, meeting an April deadline. Twitter says Turkey submits the most requests to remove postings and users. But up to this point, the company has complied with only a few. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison says multi-billion dollar investments in military bases in northern Australia are designed to enhance regional peace rather than a reaction to China's growing assertiveness. In response, officials in Beijing have called Australian politicians the, quote, real troublemakers, unquote. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Five Eyes Alliance was formed in 1941 to share secrets during World War II. Now, however, disagreements within the US-led alliance are emerging about using the spy network to exert political pressure on China. New Zealand, the group's smallest member, has expressed reluctance to sign joint statements from its alliance partners, condemning Beijing's crackdown on the democracy movement in Hong Kong and its treatment of its minority Uyghur Muslim population in Xinjiang province. The declarations have infuriated China's government. New Zealand's Foreign Minister Nanaia Mahuta believes the Five Eyes Alliance isn't the best forum to voice those concerns.
Can I say we do value the Five Eyes relationship, We receive significant benefits from being a part of that relationship, and they are close allies and friends in terms of common values and principles. But whether or not that framework needs to be invoked every time on every issue, especially in the human rights space, is something that we have expressed further views about.
However, critics, including some British lawmakers and influential newspapers, have accused the government in Wellington of selling its soul to China. They accuse New Zealand, which earns about 29% of its export revenue from China, of choosing its economic ties with Beijing over a long-standing alliance with like-minded nations. Media commentators in New Zealand have described the dilemma, speak out against China and suffer economic damage, as Australia has found, or stay silent and see the end of a moral foreign policy of which the nation was proud. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The Biden administration is considering a near wholesale rollback of some of the most stringent Trump-era sanctions imposed on Iran in a bid to get Islamic Republic to return to compliance with a landmark 2015 nuclear accord, according to current and former U.S. officials and others familiar with the matter. As indirect talks continue this week in Vienna to explore the possibility of reviving the nuclear deal, American officials have become increasingly expansive about what they might be prepared to offer Iran, which has been demanding that all U.S. penalties be removed, according to these people. American officials have refused to discuss which sanctions could be lifted, but they have said they are open to lifting any sanctions that are inconsistent with the nuclear deal or that denied Iran the relief it would be entitled to should it return to compliance with the accord. Because of the complex nature of the sanctions architecture, that could include non-nuclear sanctions such as those ties to terrorism, missile development, and human rights. This is the Voice of America. India has set another global record in new virus cases as millions of people in one state cast votes despite rising infections. With 379,257 new infections, India now has reported more than 18.3 million cases, second only to the United States. Daily deaths have nearly tripled in the past 3 weeks, reflecting the intensity of the latest surge. Ethiopia has swept up thousands of ethnic Tigrayans into detention centers across the country on accusations that they are traitors, often holding them for months and without charges, the Associated Press has found. The detentions of both military personnel and civilians are an apparent attempt to purge state institutions of the Tigrayans who once dominated them as the government enters its 6 month of fighting in the Tigray region. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. France has rearrested seven fugitive Italian leftist militants after harboring them for decades following their conviction in Italy on terrorism charges in a turning point for Paris and Rome on an issue that had long poisoned relations. Soraya Ali of Reuters reports.
France has arrested seven fugitive Italian leftist militants after harboring them for decades following their conviction in Italy on terrorism charges. Italy has been fighting for the extradition of dozens of leftist guerrillas who had been given refuge in France after the so-called Years of Lead. The period from the late 1960s to the 1980s saw extreme social and political conflict in Italy. Hundreds of people were murdered in bombings, assassinations, and street warfare by rival far-right and far-left factions. Those arrested include Giorgio Pietro Stefani, a co-founder of a far-left group. He was sentenced to 22 years in prison for his role in the 1972 murder of Milan Police Commissioner Luigi Calabresi. Police said the other six were members of the Red Brigades, all sentenced to life in prison for taking part in various murders and kidnappings. Many Italian leftist militants fled to France during the Years of Lead, where socialist President François Mitterrand pursued a policy of granting asylum to those who renounced violence. French governments later abandoned that policy, but Italy nonetheless struggled to convince Paris to hand over even those convicted of murder. Current Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi, who has established a close working relationship with French President Emmanuel Macron, welcomed the action. And Macron's office said the arrests followed months of discussions between the two countries.
That's Roy Ali of Reuters. The International Council of Nurses warns that the world is facing a nursing crisis and can expect a significant shortage in the global nursing workforce in the next few years. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The global nursing workforce of 27 million is likely to be cut in half in the next few years. The International Council of Nurses says its latest survey of 64 national nursing associations finds disputes over pay, working conditions, violence, and intimidation are causing nurses to leave their profession. Then there's the so-called COVID-19 effect. The report finds lack of protection and long and stressful shifts are having a profound impact on the mental health of nurses across the globe. ICN Chief Executive Officer Howard Catton says politicians and leaders have recognized the value of nurses in terms of their care and compassion. However, he says they have not recognized their value to society and compensated them accordingly.
That, I think, is very much also at the heart of the discontent, the unhappiness, some of the actions that we are seeing from nurses around the world, this chasm between the rhetoric, the positive rhetoric for nurses, but the paucity of practical action and practical responses to support nurses.
Strikes over nurses' pay and working conditions have broken out in Zimbabwe, in Lebanon, in Northern Ireland, in the United States, and elsewhere. The report says disputes, growing discontent, and concerns such as protection at work are undermining people's interest in pursuing a career in nursing. Another problem confronting the profession, says Catton, is the disruption of nurses' education by the pandemic. He says that is resulting in a 6 to 12 month delay in new nurses.
So those delays in the pipeline coming through, the rise in discontent, unhappiness, both, we think, again, have the potential to impact negatively on both recruitment to and retention, recruitment to the nursing profession and the retention of those nurses that we already have.
These issues and concerns exist throughout the world, but are more pronounced in low and middle income countries. That is leading to a growing brain drain. The report notes a significant exodus of nurses in developing countries going to richer countries where pay and conditions are better. At the same time, the ICN report says some of the richer countries are actively seeking to recruit nurses in the poorer countries to reduce the shortages they are experiencing. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa on Wednesday started giving his highly anticipated testimony before an inquiry into allegations of corruption under his predecessor, Jacob Zuma. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has said that the governing African National Congress could and should have done more to prevent corruption under his predecessor, Jacob Zuma. Ramaphosa was giving his highly anticipated testimony to the State Capture Inquiry, probing allegations of graft during Zuma's 9 years in power.
The whole truth and nothing else but the truth.
Ramaphosa, Zuma's former deputy, was appearing in his capacity as current leader of the ANC. It's a rare case of a sitting president giving evidence on recent alleged acts of wrongdoing by members of his own party.
We must acknowledge that the issue of state capture was a matter of great political contestation within the ANC. Differences over whether indeed state capture existed, its extent and form, and what should be done about it contributed to divisions within the National Executive Committee and other ANC structures.
The inquiry is investigating allegations, including that Zuma allowed businessmen close to him, brothers Atul Ajay and Rajesh Gupta, to influence policy and win lucrative government contracts.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.